With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I cannot be anything but. This is Friday, right? So we have our fun show on Friday. I mean, they're all fun, but
we cut loose a little bit. Save the extra special fun for Friday. So, you know, we're not saying it's aliens, but tonight we're going to look at whether it's aliens or not, by golly. And, of course, we've also got other geek. Hey, before we get into this, something I meant to talk about in the earlier shows this week. Last week, did you happen to catch any of the Perseid meteor shower?
Yeah. Now, you know, it's not like, well, you know, you look up in the sky and it was just, you know, streaking right and left like you're in the Millennium Falcon, you know, at light speed or something. It's you have to watch for them. But yeah, I saw two or three shooting stars while I was out there the other night. It was kind of cloudy for a couple of nights that it was at its peak, but we managed to see a little of it.
We had that.
How about
problem
you?
Too. We had scattered clouds the wee hours of Sunday morning, which was, Saturday morning, which was supposed to be the big night for it. But the wee hours of Friday morning, I got out there and looked. And, okay, that's the thing. You have to have your expectations right. And no matter how big they talk it up, the most spectacular meteor shower you're ever going to see is going to be, you know, nothing compared to the CGI movies, right? That's the thing, I think.
You have in your mind this idea of what a meteor shower should be. Well, what you end up seeing is a couple of shooting stars inside of a minute, you know?
Well, exactly. I mean, they were saying 160 to 200 an hour. We didn't get that. I sat out from 3 to 3:30 on Friday morning and watched and counted 10 in that half hour, which meant, you know, over an hour I would have seen 20 in it, which is a lot.
Well, you had to blink a couple of times during that 10 minutes too. So.
And I don't have the whole sky in my view, right?
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, you really can miss them out of the corner of your eye and all kinds of issues like that. But you think about how rarely you actually see one. And to see 10 in half an hour,
that's pretty
good. But my wife and I had discussed whether I was going to wake her up for this. And she's still, okay, all these years later, still bitter about one of the first things I ever talked about on the Speculus was hyping, you know, Mars was going to be at its closest point back in 2003. And she was underwhelmed by Mars at its closest point, I got to tell you. And since then has not had a lot of use.
Just a slightly reddish star is what it looked like, you know.
has not had a lot of use for these. And she told me, I said, well, you want me to wake you up or not? And she said, yes. If it looks like the beginning of Star Trek when they go to warp, then wake me up. Otherwise, no.
Otherwise, let me sleep. I have a home video from the early 90s, Phil. This was in the first year or two that Sherilyn and I were married, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the The title on the side of the videotape says "Sleepy Sherilyn Stares for at Star Shower." And I woke up Sherilyn like at 4 a.m. to go see, you know, and she was, at that point, she was too groggy to resist. Okay. She couldn't,
right.
You know, she couldn't, summon an argument against being drug out to see this. Phil, I have to say that, you know, you learn as a husband over the years, there's certain things that you want to involve your spouse in, and other things it's probably best not to.
Hopefully you learn that. And that has been
the secret of the longevity of our marriage, you know, 25 years this year. So, and I learned early in our marriage, you don't drag Sherilyn out.
You have not woken her for another meteor shower since, is that right?
Since then, you know. I simply have not. There was another occasion where I woke up early in the morning and tried to get the kids up too, when they bombarded the moon, you know, to see what if they could get water out of a crater, and they did, And it was,
yes.
I thought that was pretty cool, and that was probably about 4:30 our time, you know, on a weekday morning before work, you know, and so I got up and did that. And I think I was able to get one of the kids halfway up, and of course he slept through it. But anyway, that's the sort of thing that you learn. But you had a larger point about the meteor shower.
It would be a good show for us to do. You know, we've talked about social issues that we could take on. Obviously, human sexuality is one that people want to hear us talk about. But I think just general marriage advice from Phil and Stephen would be an awesome show.
We've had some success in this, so why not?
If we ever get out of the future business. I really didn't have a larger point. It's just that thinking about alien structures got me thinking about looking up at the night sky and the things we see up there. And I remembered that we hadn't talked about the Perseids. And supposedly it was the big year for the Perseids. So, you know, a lot that goes on out there in space is subtle. A lot of it is, very small changes can mean very, very big things. And that's the case definitely with our alien megastructures that we've spoken about before. Well, what's all this about? Basically, it comes down to a question of what's going on with a particular star. Why is this star different from every other star that we know of in the universe, as far as I know, in terms of the fact that it just doesn't stay bright the way it's supposed to, and in terms of changing its brightness, it doesn't do that the way it's supposed to either, which has led to speculation as to what's actually going on there. And we've talked about all the plausible, conventional theories about what might be going on there. There's comets orbiting the star that's obscuring it. That's why it goes dim on us. There's some kind of cloud. Even when you account for all those possibilities, it remains quite mysterious what's happening with this star, which has led to more exotic hypotheses being evolved, up to and including, well, there's aliens there, they're building something around this star, and the construction process is obscuring the light from the star.
Yeah, we're talking about what is known as a Dyson swarm, more than likely. A Dyson sphere, probably impossible, but a Dyson swarm, not necessarily. That would be just so many, think of it this way, so many solar-powered gizmos surrounding this star that it begins to dim the light, right? So that's kind of what we're talking about, perhaps.
I just want to say to all the aliens listening from advanced civilizations who chuckle at Stephen because he says Dyson spheres are impossible. Sorry, we're going based on what we understand about the universe.
Structurally what we would be able to accomplish. Exactly.
Yeah, you guys know better than we do. So, okay, you know, laugh at us all you want, but we're doing our best here.
We're operating from limited knowledge here. But anyway,
understand. If you guys are so smart, make a ring world, okay? Because that was a cool book, and that's what we'd really like to find out there. But we'll get to that in a minute. So we've got this story. The so-called alien megastructures just got even more mysterious. So if they're building a swarm out there, we're learning more about the impact that's having on our ability to observe what's called Tabby's star is the name of it. And scientists, astronomers are taking a closer look at the data and finding some very interesting stuff. For the first
well, you know, an LSU professor, Phil, did a study going back. He actually was able to pull plates from that part of the sky, old plates, and he published data showing that over the last 100 years or so, the light from the star has faded. And there's been some pushback on that, saying, well, your data's flawed or whatever. But this is not based on old photographic plates, is it?
No. This is based on the best data we have from the Kepler probe. Okay, so this is looking at current as precise as is available data, and what it's showing is that over 1,000 days of Kepler looking at this star, that star decreased in luminosity by, they say, approximately 0.34% per year. Okay, so. Over 1,000 days, that means it's almost going down a whole percent over those 1,000 days, if I'm doing my math correctly. And then for the next 200 days, much shorter period of time, the star dimmed more rapidly, and its total stellar flux dropped by 2% before leveling off. So you've got this steady stream of drop in luminosity, a third of a percent per year, and then suddenly 2% in less than a year.
It's interesting that
the over that period of time. Go ahead.
Astronomers looked at 500 other stars in the vicinity and saw nothing else like it. And the reason they do that, Phil, is they want to make sure there's not a cloud of dust obscuring that part of the night sky, right?
Right, right. And it's a very specific cloud of dust because it's not obscuring any other stars. Whatever's there appears to be a local phenomenon. It's local to that star, which again could still be some kind of bizarre swarm of comets or something like that. But then why is this the only star that happens at, right? Why have we never seen another star that has comets that obscure its light and then make it go dim? It's entirely possible that it's just a very rare phenomenon, and this is the first time we found one.
Yeah. To be fair, we're still figuring out, hey, triple star systems are possible and all kinds of different things are possible. So it could be something that's exotic, but not aliens, right?
Exactly.
It's pretty darn weird, though. I laughed and said, it could be the aliens fiddling with their Venetian blinds,
That's too much. Okay, no. Don't.
Yeah, that's just right. Just right.
The aliens are trying to watch TV, and they want to get the screen.
They want the luminosity at just the right level.
Exactly. They don't want too much reflection.
But,
they don't want to sleep. I think that the real issue is, for something like this, is it responsible, right? Is it scientifically credible to start talking about the aliens hypothesis, right? Is that just a crazy journalistic thing, or is that something that science should really be engaged in? And that's where we come to this story from Seth Shostak. Obviously he's a big voice in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and he's got this piece at The Guardian where he says, well, have we detected an alien megastructure in space? Keep an open mind, okay? You don't want to say it's got to be that, but it's equally wrong, I think, to say it can't be that, right? So I think he walks a fine line in this piece, and I think he walks it quite well. One of the things he points out is that up to now, every time aliens have been given credit for strange astronomical phenomena, it has turned out not to be aliens, right? He's not saying it's aliens because up to now it has not been aliens, okay? When pulsars were first discovered, somebody said, oh, it's aliens, right? A lot of background radio signals and radiation, just various phenomena that have been detected, that have been anomalous, have been attributed to, among other things, potentially aliens over the years, and turned out to have much more mundane explanations. Is that what's going to happen here? Probably, right? You know, chances are that's what's going to happen here. But that doesn't mean you can say definitely that that's what's going to happen here. As with those earlier cases, here we've got some anomalous data. Here we've got data that our models of the universe don't account for. And if you're going to be a responsible scientist, you got to use your imagination a little bit. You have to apply the principle that if we don't know, then we don't know. And if you put limitations around what it could possibly be, and it turns out it is that thing, you're actually going to slow down how fast we can learn about the universe, right? Because you've excluded the possibility that turns out to be the case. So, I think that's a pretty good argument that we don't have to go full on, you know, Discovery Channel documentary about this, or History Channel. Where is that UFO Hunter?
Yeah, the History Channel.
Yeah, we don't have to go full on History Channel. But we shouldn't go full on skeptic with a capital S either.
There's room between Michael Shermer and that guy with the weird hairdo that says he's not saying salience, right? there is a nice middle ground between the world's foremost skeptic and that guy, and I think that's probably where you want to be. I think it was Lord Kelvin who said that heavier than air aircraft would never be possible. You don't want to be that scientist necessarily, do you?
No.
That you know bases everything on what we know now, and therefore it can never be any other way. You always want to leave open the possibility that we could discover aliens for the first time at some point in the future, right? I mean, there is that possibility. And a lot of scientists, if you talk, you know, you talk to them privately and say, well, I mean, you know, it's a big universe. What do you think? Are we the only ones out here? And most of them would tell you that just wouldn't make any sense statistically.
Right.
It's got to be somebody else somewhere. And but there's a big step between that and saying Tabby's star's got aliens, right?
There is a big step between that, and it's having conclusive evidence, or even very strong evidence that there's any aliens there. But if you're open to the possibility, the other benefit that provides is it helps you to start developing models of thought and tests for that phenomenon, right? Which you don't have tests around. If you won't consider the possibility. So if there are aliens out there and they are detectable, we'll never find them if we assume they aren't there or if we assume they can never be detected.
Yeah.
Right?
Or even if we assume that every anomaly turns
out to be something else, you know, we'll never find
them. Yeah. And so if we think that there's the possibility, then we have our eyes open to certain things. And one of those things might be things like Tabby Star, where you see a star that's weirdly dimming in ways that don't seem to make sense. And then there's this other one. We have another article here about something else we might look for, Phil.
Look for planets that have become stars, right? That's the headline. And, of course, those of us who are fans of the movie 2010, The Year We Made Contact, we know that one day we could turn, you know, with sufficiently advanced technology, we could turn Jupiter into a star. That idea has been batted around as a possibility. If you look out into the galaxy, you're going to find, as we've talked about in recent shows, a lot of different configurations of planets. Sometimes you've got a star that has a few planets close in. Sometimes it's got big ones far out. Sometimes it's got a big one close in. And you've got binary stars, you've got all kinds of different star relationships. And ultimately, planets represent stars that never were, to a certain extent.
The biggest of the gas giants, for sure, right?
Yeah. And Jupiter is a good example of that. It wasn't, you know, it's not big enough to be a star, but almost is. And maybe with a little nudge and with some advanced technology, you could take a body like Jupiter and turn it into a star. Say you want another.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Phil, seems like it was just 2 or 3 weeks ago, we learned that Jupiter is so massive that it's the center of gravity between Jupiter and the Sun lies outside the Sun.
That's right.
Actually pulls the Sun, like the hammer throw athlete gets pulled by the hammer that he or she is throwing, right?
Right.
And in fact, there's so much mass in Jupiter that you put all the other planets together, including the other gas giants, Saturn and Uranus and all the rest, put everything else together, and it doesn't equal the mass of Jupiter, all the other planets put together. So that's a big old planet out there, and like you say, it's not big enough to be a star naturally, but you know. Maybe there's some artificial means of igniting something like that, and maybe that's something we look for, is something that should be a planet but is actually shining like a star.
Yeah, well, or look for a star that, for its size, is brighter than it should be. This is how they talk about, you know, it's like okay, so you're looking for, obviously, if you see a planet and then it becomes a star, that would be great evidence. Chances are we're not going to catch that anytime soon. You know, if we caught that phenomenon occurring, it would be like, okay, that's weird. That could be aliens for sure, you know, if we saw that happen. But, you know, the odds of actually catching that in process are too remote even to consider. But what you might find is a star that doesn't seem to have the origin that it should. And one of the ways that they suggest you look for that is you look for a little star accompanying a bigger star that seems brighter than it should be. And as we go, we'll develop other criteria for looking for that as well. You know, it's like we're at the very beginning stages, but eventually you get a checklist of what would be odd things to look for in a star related to another star that might indicate that some stellar engineering has gone on there. The great thing about this is so preliminary. That starting to ask those kinds of questions is going to raise other ideas, and we'll begin to probably, in our minds, imagine completely different stellar engineering or astro-engineering projects that we hadn't thought of before, and we'll have more to look for. You know, we'll begin to learn how ignorant we are on this topic, because it sounds good to us, because we've got Jupiter out there, and we've already had science fiction stories about doing it. That might not ultimately be the thing you do. You know, you might not actually turn your planet into a star. You might do something else completely. But if we start there, if we start by talking about that and looking for that, just like, you know, if we start by taking a star that's going dim and ask what exactly is happening with this star, it starts to point us in the direction where we might ultimately find something. We might find something we're not even imagining right now, and we won't be able to imagine until we've gone through a few iterations of looking for what's out there.
That's right. That's right. Brown, you know, brown dwarfs shining as bright as our own sun, things like that. Who knows? And then all of a sudden it begins to dim because the aliens are doing the Tabby Star thing with their brown dwarf turned bigger star. Who knows? We you know, I guess just have your eyes open for weirdness.
You can build a Dyson sphere, but it has to be on a star you built yourself for the following reasons, right, that we would never have thought of,
yeah.
Right? It's all the interesting engineering that we can't quite imagine yet, but that we'll never get to if we don't start imagining it. So if nothing else, even if we never find any of it, we start thinking of some great ideas for things we can do. So that's the best reason, perhaps, to look for aliens. It helps us to look, in a sense, oddly enough, for our own future. So, you know, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's maybe our future if we keep looking. Okay, other geek. Steven, there are enough superheroes for 3,400 years of movies. This is a story over in Wired, and they say that between Marvel and DC Comics...
Yeah, if you're feeling any fatigue from superhero fatigue in the cinema, this is not good news necessarily. But I love superhero movies.
This is not good news for you if you feel as I do that maybe this is being pushed beyond where it should have gone, or we might run out of good things to do. Hey, but if the number of superhero movies is determined by the available characters. We can keep going for quite some time. There's 17,000 characters to choose from. enough for them to keep battling it out for box office dominance for the next 3,400 years. That's you know, and that seems like a pretty modest estimate, right?
Well, and here's the thing, Phil. You know, a lot of people might push back and argue, well, hey, you know, beyond the big guys, you know, Superman, Batman, you know, and then over Marvel, Spider-Man, things like that. You know, who cares? Well, can I point out things like Guardians of the Galaxy? You know, Nobody had ever heard of those superheroes before that movie, practically. Once you had to be a pretty big comic book geek to even know who those people were.
Right.
And, I mean, very obscure superheroes. And it made one of the most popular superhero movies ever out of it. I mean, it comes down to good storytelling, and you know, they did it with that movie. And sometimes, you know, it's you because you're not bound to certain expectations, you can just go and do whatever you want to. You can tell whatever story you want to. You know, to some extent, if I were a writer for one of those movies, I think I'd prefer to write for one of the obscure guys if I was going to make a movie.
Well, I've always felt that, there's just more room for things to go in a completely creative and unexpected direction in like a smaller franchise. You know what I mean? I used to read Doom Patrol. I used to read Metal Men. You know, these are DC comics that are like not the big, it's not the Justice League. And it's, you know, it's this, like comics that had a hard time kind of finding an audience and that would sputter around. They'd do 10 issues here and then you wouldn't see them for 5 years and they'd come back and do 5 more issues. Or
Great Lakes Avengers, you know. The Great Lakes Avengers had characters like Squirrel Girl. You know, her power was, you know, she controlled squirrels. But I mean, to me, that's fun stuff. You know, some of the obscure things.
Yeah. I think the in some ways, the more obscure, the better. And one thing that you had mentioned is that that's only talking DC and Marvel. You know, there's a lot of independents out there. There are smaller comic book companies that have been producing stories for a long time. You know, there's
Dynamite is a new company. Dynamite is a new company, and their whole business model seems to be to get rights to IPs that you know, have a certain nostalgic hold on the public, you know, and put out comic book series for it. And they've got things like Ash and the Evil Dead, and they've done a series of that, and it's fun. And $6 Million Man, you know, you got Steve Austin and doing, you know, great stuff. Well, they got the rights to Doc Savage. I think Marvel briefly had it. I think
everybody
DC may have
had
Doc Savage
at one point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's been passed around. He was almost a precursor to the superheroes. You know, before Superman, there was Doc Savage. You know,
a lot of Superman shows up in Doc Savage. You know, his name is Clark.
Yeah,
Savage, a little piece of trivia.
Did you know that the first Fortress of Solitude in the Arctic was belonged to Doc Savage?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any rate, my kids, one of my kids had a birthday last week, and I gave him the omnibus of the Dynamite revival of Doc Savage. We got a Doc Savage fan in the house now. He loves it, you know, and says it's too bad Marvel doesn't have him. They could bring him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that'd be fun. But, you know, hey, Marvel's got plenty of
enough characters.
They've got a lot of characters.
Let's let there be some other universes out there as well. But I think the points well made. Although there's been a lot of consolidation over the years, both DC and Marvel have bought a lot of you know, all the old Fawcett characters, all the old Charlton characters are all DC characters now, right? So a lot of a lot of work that was
well,
done.
Well, didn't Captain America start as a Fawcett comic and Marvel?
He may
got
have,
him.
And he ended up in Marvel. Yeah, so that's interesting too. But like Captain Marvel was Fawcett. And then, we could, you know what, we could geek out over this all day. We're already out of time, unfortunately.
Yeah, we could turn this into its own show, just geeking out on this stuff.
Bottom line is, there's enough superheroes for 3,400 years of movies, and out of that, there might be, a dozen easy good movies. So we got that.
out of the 3,400 years, to be a good movie in there. Or two.
Yeah, I think it doesn't. I'm optimistic. So anyway, we got that to look forward to, and let's pick this up, Stephen. It's fun talking about old comics. We'll do that on a future Other Geek, which will be next week when we do three more brand new shows. We look forward to being with you all then, and until next time, live to see it.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.